Good morning, everyone. What I have is just some comments on some of the science aspects related to petroleum. The first slide, which hopefully you can all see, it just relates to what we call the petroleum systems concept. So to produce petroleum from a sedimentary basin, you need to have a number of elements that are all operating to develop hydrocarbons, oil and gas, and this whole process takes a long time. You need to have some source rocks, so-called. So these are rocks that are rich in organic material. Now, typically in a New Zealand case, this is old vegetation material, old forests, coal swamps and the like. For many other countries, it can be fossil materials, or shells, but typically in New Zealand, most of the oil and gas is sourced from former forest materials. The next thing you need to have is some generation. So this involves the transformation of the hydrocarbons that once formed those plant materials into very complex aromatic hydrocarbons. And you do that through burial. And you basically need to heat up the sediments that contain all this organic material through temperatures of around 120 to 140 degrees Celsius. And typically you do that by burying those sediments to depths of around 3 to 4 kilometres. As you go down into the crust, the temperature increases, and it's about those sort of depths that you start to generate hydrocarbons. So that's the second element of the petroleum system. The third is migration. You need pathways. So once you've transformed these hydrocarbons into these aromatic hydrocarbons, they change their density and they become light. So the gases and the oil, if you like, float up or they migrate upwards into younger structures where they ultimately get trapped in the fourth component into a reservoir. So this is a storage container in which the hydrocarbons reside, and they reside there because of a primary factor, which is trap. So that's the fifth component. You need to have some impermeable layer on top of that reservoir such that the hydrocarbons don't escape. So they're quite light, and they'll want to move out of that reservoir and go upwards. So if you have an effective trap, you can store the oil and gas within that reservoir. And then lastly, you've got to have a seal. So that's effectively this impermeable layer on the top that's providing a lid. I'll just go to the second slide now. So this is a diagrammatic indication of hydrocarbons, oil and gas. So those various elements that I discussed. So at the base there, you can see some source rock, some organic material that gets heated through burial through that 120 to 140 degrees Celsius. It's got Fahrenheit on that diagram, I apologise. And then you've got to have migration. So the density of those hydrocarbons change. They move upwards through structures, typically faults, as is indicated in this diagram, into a trapment feature or a reservoir. So the different colours there indicate a gas cap and oil sitting above water. That's the typical relationship because of their density. Water will be at the base and gas at the top. And you've got to have some sort of a structure that traps those hydrocarbons. So in this diagram, you've got a bit of an arch, or what we call an anticline, that's folded the rock layers into some sort of a structure. And then ultimately, of course, that's what you are looking for in exploration. You're looking for structures like these that may be suitable repositories for hydrocarbons. Okay, so I'll just go to the next slide. So it's a very interesting science. It's like a detective story. There's all sorts of clues out there, and it's only through one's training and experience that you recognise what those clues are. So if you like, it's a detective story, and there's a whole range of different elements that could be part of that clue-seeking exercise that scientists, explorers are seeking. So at the top there, we start with seismic interpretation. That's one of the main tools that geologists use to try and understand the subsurface structure, and I've got another slide that illustrates some of that. So these are data that's collected typically at sea by a ship, but also on land by trucks and the like. And effectively you send out a sound signal, and that's recorded, and because the velocity of that sound wave changes through different layers, you can record those as different sedimentary layers. Now you have to process that data from the original field recording, things like migration modelling. There's a lot of computer modelling involved. We're trying to understand the migration pathways of hydrocarbons. Coming around to the right, you can model how the hydrocarbons may have been cooked up and then migrated into structures. You need to know something about the geochemistry of the source rocks coming around the diagram on the bottom right. So there's a lot of geochemistry that goes into studying the coals that make up the oil and gas precursors. You've got to have sufficient seal rock, as I indicated before. We have to understand the geological time frames that we're dealing with, and typically it's over millions of years. We've got to have a reservoir that's of good quality. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done to understand that. And it's only when you've got all of these elements together that you can have a viable petroleum entrapment and discovery in a sedimentary basin. So the likelihood of finding oil and gas is in fact very low. Right, so I'll just move on to the fourth slide. So what's our role? Like all sciences, there's a number of sub-disciplines that are involved with oil and gas exploration. And it's a team effort. There's lots of people who work on different specializations to try and understand how that puzzle has been put together. So those are all the elements that would be required, just as you go to a doctor and you'd be referred to various specialists. These are all the specialist groups that would be involved with petroleum exploration. I'll move to the next slide. This is a diagram of a typical workflow. Most of the data that geologists would be working on is what's called seismic profiles that are acquired either by ships at sea or on land through trucks and the like. These are sound signals that are set off from the surface, and they travel through different sedimentary layers, and the return time of those energy waves are recorded in this profile, so a two-dimensional profile, so you can see it there in the red and white on the right-hand side. From that, interpreters can understand how deep those sediments have been buried, and we can correlate and ground truth that by any well data that happens to be in that general area. And you can see some of these vertical poles are some data that have been collected from wells. This is an example from Taranaki Basin. And then finally, on the top left is a resultant map. So this is something that would be used as a prime method of studying where hydrocarbons may occur in a sedimentary basin. And you can see there the different colours indicate the depth, in this case rocks, from the surface to the top of those basement rocks through that portion of Taranaki Basin. This is an example of the density, the sort of data that earth scientists deal with. It's from Taranaki, west side of the North Island, and it just gives you a bit of a feel for the density of some of these seismic lines. So these are in large part offshore lines where ships have gone through collecting some of the seismic data. So there's a whole myriad of data that is collected and then needs to be interpreted. Next slide. So we build up models. This is just a simple cartoon that would be based on a whole range of some of those seismic profiles. But it just gives an indication of the various layers through the upper part of the crust. So the age of the rocks are indicated on the left-hand side there. And it gives us some idea of what the structure is like in the subsurface. So geologists use these to try and understand how the sedimentary basins have evolved and just what's happened to the different layers. So they'll be looking for structures in an area like this to try and find anticlines, for example, or pinch-outs where hydrocarbons may have been trapped in reservoirs. Last slide. Okay, so how much is still to be... how much is still unexplored? Well, most of New Zealand's land area is pretty poorly explored still. Taranaki, which is the best known and only producing petroleum province in the country, is by world standards still only moderately explored. And each of the disciplines that I've alluded to obviously need a lot of detailed work in the future to try and better understand what's going on. And in terms of the challenges lying ahead, one of the big issues in the geoscience sector is the lack of skilled earth scientists. It's an aged workforce population. There are relatively few students going into science generally and certainly into earth sciences. So that's going to be a challenge going forward to find suitable skilled scientists that can work with energy issues. And another thing looming is just how fast technology develops over time. If you look at the way companies are operated 10 years ago versus what they operate today, computers, modelling, the amount of data that people use in those sort of models has just grown astronomically, and it's quite a different work environment now compared with what it was just a decade or so ago. So there'll be great advances in technology going forward. Okay, so that's all I have to say on the slides.
Thanks, Greg. We'll hold questions till the end. If I could hand over now to our next speaker, Dr. Richard Cook.
Thanks, Dacia. Oil and gas exploration in particularly the offshore area of New Zealand. We have a huge area, as Greg has alluded to, that in New Zealand we really don't understand a lot of it. This indicates the area of control now of New Zealand. It is a full continent. It's some 21 times the size of the onshore. It's a huge area, and within that area there are a lot of basins there that you can see both on the Campbell Plateau but also round to the north of New Zealand, northwest of New Zealand. There are huge areas that have got oil and gas potential. These, as Greg said, we need the depth of sediment to mature hydrocarbons, and all of these areas appear to have at least some indication of thick sediments in those areas. So the work of the work of Crown Minerals is to interest the industry in New Zealand. Now, we're working in an international market here, and unfortunately our areas have to stack up against areas from maybe as far afield as China, as North Sea, as Africa. And we have to show that we have that capability or petroleum system active in these basins so we can explore. Now, exploration has gone on in New Zealand for a long time. It started in 1865. The Motoroa field in New Plymouth was first drilled there. But modern exploration really started in the 1950s, which led to the find of the Kapuni field in 1959. We moved offshore, and the first licenses there were awarded in the mid-1960s. And by 1969, Maui Field was actually identified, and the first drilling of that took place. The first oil in New Zealand was actually found at Makii in 1979 and 80. And we stepped out into deep water as early as 1976 in the Great South Basin when Hunt were doing their exploration drilling. But mostly the exploration to date has been in the sort of 100 to 300 metre water depths, and so not really the extensive, very deep water that the rest of the basins around New Zealand are going to face. All the exploration, as Greg mentioned, requires a lot of work prior to drilling, And there's some 3 to 5 years of seismic work, of understanding the previous drilling that has gone on, and also the understanding the concepts and plays that you want to drill yourself as a as an explorer. And we put the permits around New Zealand, and we put them up for bidding, but not on a financial basis, but on the basis of work programs. But oil and gas exploration is already a large part of our New Zealand economy, and this is something I want to stress. We're spending some $300 million a year, as can be seen in the some of the stats that I've put up on the slide. Some $300 million there for just exploration. And the total for petroleum, that's exploration and development, in 2008 and 9, which involved the sort of the development of Pohokura field, the beginnings of the development of the Māori Manaia, the beginnings of the development of Kupe fields, came to about $1.2 billion. That's big money in anyone's sense. And but we do also gain from that. The oil and gas, oil and condensate, not the gas, sorry, the oil and condensate, the liquids, in other words, exports, $2.8 billion. And they're some, they're third behind dairy and meat in 2008-2009. And we expect that to rise, that amount to rise with the onset of the Māori field, Manaia field and the Kupe. All of these will increase from 2010. And the return to the country, just in pure royalties, is about $500 million. To add to that, there's the tax that returns to New Zealand, the company tax, and we take something around 50% of the production, the oil and gas export, and other product New Zealand production of gas. We get back to the Crown, so there is a considerable return, not just the 3 to 5 percent royalty. But you've got to think of the company taxes on top of that. As well as the royalties, the data, as Greg has alluded to, is the basis of a lot of the science that's that goes on around New Zealand and understanding the petroleum systems of the different basins. In Crown Minerals, we're tasked with bringing more and more companies into New Zealand to explore, getting that investment and exploration going. That is getting more and more difficult because a lot of the companies now that have to explore are having to explore in deep and deeper water as we move out to these newer basins. This means that we've got to bring new companies in, big companies in, and we've been very fortunate. We've got OMV, we've got PTTEP from Thailand, we've got Petrobras now from Brazil, and Anadarko, all of whom have come in within the last 4 years into the New Zealand scene. And these are major companies that are putting huge expenditure into exploration and evaluating our basins. The main reason for this is that the New Zealand government sees that it is an opportunity to have a major quantum step for our New Zealand economy if we make a discovery, a major discovery. And we need to understand what resources we have out in our economic zone. And sort of we've got to map the farm in effect. And there's a lot of work, both scientifically and from the exploration point of view, just to get the basics of understanding so we can bring the companies into New Zealand. We're giving them showing an interest here in the New Zealand area. Now, over the last 5 years, the Crown has gone out and collected a large amount of seismic data. This slide shows you some of the areas that have been explored. and the areas that have been offered for blocks and explorers have taken up. Great South Basin in the south. We've recently just completed shooting seismic in the Bounty Trough and in the Pegasus Basin off Wellington. Those areas will be worked up. There's about 6 to 9 months of processing of all that seismic that is gathered off the ships and interpreting it so that we can entice the industry to have a look at a block offer and to make an offer of work program for us. The Raukumara Basin off the east coast there, you can see where we collected seismic lines. And as I mentioned before, we've just recently had Petrobras take up a permit off there. The Rianga Basin and Northern Basins, these are areas that are presently have got block offers out for tender. And we're looking forward to the closing date in August when we'll see what the companies bid on those areas. And as I say, the bidding is the amount of work that they're going to carry out. But we don't just do seismic work. We're looking at other means, and one of the first and cheapest ways of finding out if that petroleum system that Greg was mentioning is working. In other words, has there been oil and gas generated? Well, there are natural oil seeps occurring both onshore and offshore. We see a lot of them around Taranaki. We see them down the east coast. But offshore, they also leave a trace on the sea surface. We've seen the extreme case of that, of course, in the Gulf of Mexico. But these little seeps, natural seeps, are occurring around the New Zealand coast all the time. And this gives an indication of where some of those seeps are occurring off the Northland coast. And they give an indication to the company that at least, first off, there's a source rock present, and secondly, that it has been buried deep enough to generate some oil and gas. We hope then that we can find the traps and the reservoirs that we can find commercial quantities of the oil and gas. So satellite seep studies, where we're looking at the wave patterns on the sea surface, are an important part and a precursor to offering blocks to the industry. And this shows the seismic work, the new seismic work over those blocks that we have out on offer at the moment. It just shows a progression. But that progression only comes from an understanding of that area. And one of the things we did as part of this workup of the block offer was have GNS do a major interpretation of the area, the seismic data, and take their knowledge of the onshore geology and put it into the seismic information so that we could start understanding where the potential of this basin lies. And now it's up to the companies to take that and decide on what their bidding process is going to be. So there are many opportunities around New Zealand at present. We've got block offers in the Northland and Rianga, as I've mentioned, which close in August. We have another system whereby some open areas can be bid for on priority and time, and a number of companies do that, the offshore parts of Taranaki. There are small areas that have not been taken up by other companies, and a company can put in a priority bid. There will be further block offers coming up in the next 12 months. Pegasus, Bounty area down by between Great South Basin and Canterbury in the deeper water there. And then, of course, many of the companies do look for partners once they've gone through the first stages before they actually get to drill, where the more expensive operations occur. And the companies look for are looking for partners to sort of help them sort of spread their risk in effect. But overall, in New Zealand, we're looking to transform the country. Oil and gas, we hope in the long run, it's a game, it's a difficult game. with a 1 to 10, in many instances, success rate. So it's not a foregone conclusion by any means. But if we stayed in our same world, we'll have a marginal percentage of our oil and gas needs for the country, as can be seen on the bottom left-hand quadrant there of the four scenarios that I've put up. Most of that will come from nearby existing fields. Things like Tui and Maari will continue being developed. For good security, we'd like to find more of those. We might fulfill our needs for not just the next 10 to 15 years, but to fulfill our needs for several decades. And that will come through Tui, Pohokura over time, multiple ones like those fields being found in other areas. There's potential of lignite conversion and a slow development of gas hydrates on the East Coast. But the real major step for New Zealand would come if we moved into the top two quadrants. The left-hand side, 1 to 2 big finds, LNG or oil, liquid natural gas. The gas could be liquefied and sent overseas. These require large volumes and large finds to do this. But as we've seen, even with Tui, we get some export value out of the oil. But the real ultimate aim would be, of course, to become a Pacific Norway, where we're finding multiple ones of those in each of these 10 basins offshore. There's the potential for finding what's colloquially termed in the industry the elephants, and that would be the great. It would give New Zealand a huge push if we were lucky enough to find that. So as far as our value is concerned, we see there is a return to New Zealand. There is a good financial return, both from the tax and royalties. But also there's a lot of data that is collected. Greg showed the seismic database before, and the oil and the drilling database is also huge. We have cuttings and core from many parts around the country, and these are all collected and held within Crown Minerals, and we really we're lucky to have those samples. Over the years, many people have thought to keep them because the modern science is able to be lifted from those samples rather than just the older understanding that occurred at the time of drilling. And to this end, as well as the collection of new seismic data, Crown Minerals has actually a major project called the petroleum project for the GNS to actually work on the seismic and also work on the understanding of Taranaki so that we can feed that into the understanding of our other basins. So that's how we see the way forward. We're working more and more closely with GNS and NIWA. Both of those groups have got understanding that we hope will help to bring new companies into New Zealand. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Richard.